Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
I'm Barbara Coloroso. I have worked in this field for 55 years. This is my 55th. I am an international author and lecturer on various topics like parenting, raising responsible, resourceful, resilient, compassionate human beings, parenting through crisis, teaching with wit and wisdom, and raising ethical human beings. And then I moved into the area of bullying, having worked with troubled adolescents, some of whom got in our program through the juvenile justice system because they were targeted by other kids and delivered a punch or couldn't take it anymore and did something else that got them in serious trouble. And so I began to explore the whole issue of bullying and how so often we treat it as conflict. And then I worked in Rwanda with orphans from the 94 genocide. My publisher said, "What did you see when you were there?" And I said, "I saw a connection between hateful rhetoric and crimes against humanity, and that it is truly a short walk from hateful rhetoric to hate crimes to crimes against humanity. Genocide is not an unimaginable horror. It was thoroughly imagined, meticulously planned, and horrifically carried out by people who started by othering others, by discriminating against them, by holding them in absolute contempt and dehumanizing them. Well, bullying is about contempt for another human being. And it's getting pleasure from someone else's pain or not caring about the pain that they're in. So it is a conscious, willful, deliberate, hostile activity intended to cause harm. And so putting those both together after I wrote my genocide book, Extraordinary Evil, a reporter in Canada said to me, "But I thought you lectured on parenting and teaching." I said, "Where do you think the cruel and the mean begins? It begins at home, at school, and in our communities." And then as I'm working with parents and educators, I found, and myself being an educator, a parent and a grandparent, that we often fail to discern the difference between normal, natural, and necessary conflict, which is so important for our well-being with other human beings, and bullying. And what was happening in homes and schools is we were using the tools of conflict resolution, which are very good for conflict, but trying to use them with dealing with a bullying scenario, what we end up doing is retargeting the targeted child or person in the community and reinforcing the behavior of the person who bullied. And then I looked at what Sebastian Hafner in Defying Hitler called the trap of comradeship and related it back to schools and communities where when one person takes the role, and it truly is a role, it's not that they are a bully, but it's a role they play, doesn't do it alone. And they often have what Sebastian called the trap of comradeship, a group of people going along to get along. And so the title of my book is The Bully, the Not So Innocent Bystander, with an emphasis on not so innocent bystander. William Burroughs said it so beautifully, there are no innocent bystanders. But there is also a fourth character, and that is the brave-hearted kid, the witness, resistor, defender, somebody willing to stand up, speak out, step in, do the right thing when it's difficult to do. And so that's how I developed a program to use in homes and schools for breaking this horrific cycle of violence and truly raising ethical human beings who have the courage to stand up and speak out and step in to be those witnesses, resistors, and defenders, which we so desperately need today in this world.
Would you say it's, and thank you for all that, would you say that it's more along the lines of educating students, but also more so educating parents about the importance of sympathy and empathy being taught to their kids before they go to school?
Yes, it starts very, very young, raising responsible, and these all go together, responsible, resourceful, resilient, compassionate human beings. So I want to raise a generation of kids who know how to think, not just what to think. It's so critical that we raise them in an environment where they can make choices and decisions, and when they mess up, hold them accountable for it. That all lays the foundation for them understanding not self-esteem. I have a real problem with self-esteem. That's so me, 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 me. But Martin Buber talked about I and thou. That I'm unique and you're unique. And we both bring to this conversation or bring to a relationship our unique talents and our liabilities. And Martin Buber said that in turn creates we. I can't be all I can be without my interactions with other human beings. And that interaction helps me see that you in pain, that I can help you relieve your suffering. Caring deeply about another human being doesn't mean you have to like them. I've always said to my students, you don't have to like every kid in this classroom. You must honor their humanity and treat them with dignity and regard. You don't have to be their best friend. You need to treat them with dignity and regard. Working in genocide studies, in every genocide, the first thing genocidaires would do was dehumanize another human being. In Rwanda, Tutsis were called cockroaches. Armenians were called dogs. Jews and Roma and Sinti were called vermin and bacteria eating at the fabric of our humanity. Rohingyas still are referred to as fleas. So that's why it's so important as young human beings that not only they understand I, thou, and our common humanity, but they witness it in us as parents and educators. Kids learn a lot more from not just what we say, but what do we do? How do we treat another person who's different than us? Do we invite that diversity? Do we recognize that they are equal to us as human beings? Again, I don't have to like where you're coming from. I don't know that much, so I won't say, but I don't have to. However, I have to treat you with dignity and regard and listen to you. I can then have a conflict with something you might be saying, but in that conflict, it's with absolute respect for our dignity and worth. It's not respecting your opinions or your beliefs, but respecting you as a human being. And so I have to walk my talk and talk my walk with children, whether it's at home or at school and in the larger community, because there are three virulent agents ripping apart the fabric of our humanity today. They've been around for a long time, hating other human beings with utter contempt, hoarding me, mine, and more instead of us, ours, and enough, and harming through lying and cheating and stealing. You say, well, what's wrong with lying, cheating, and stealing? First of all, it destroys my own personal integrity. And secondly, it destroys my relationship with you because you won't trust me if you can't trust what I say or how I act. And with that lack of trust, we destroy the we destroy community. And so what are the antidotes to that? We can start this very, very young with children. Care deeply for others. And that's, again, not necessarily liking them or liking their ideas, but caring deeply about them. If they are suffering, we have a must, not a you should do something or maybe I will if you're my friend, but that must in us to relieve that suffering. That's deep caring. And so you care deeply, share generously of your talents, your resources, and not be hoarding things. And teaching young people very early on that with allowance, you spend, you save, and you share with those who are in a more difficult situation, or you generously share of your talents. And then you care deeply, share generously, help willingly. Do we have children helping others because it's a good thing to do, or are we giving them rewards? And the flip side of that is punishments. I don't want praise-dependent, reward-dependent kids. They make wonderful henchmen for bullies. They will go along to get along. And so I want to teach kids that it's in us to help. It's in us to care deeply. It's in us to share. And to constantly help our young people do that at home and at school.
That's interesting. You're kind of touching on the intrinsic versus extrinsic. And I teach that with my son, and I've taught that with my students. We have Valerie Samaripa. If you have any questions here, she's one of our counselors who's on this meeting.
Sure.
I wanted to see if you could touch on, you talk about in your book, Kids Are Worth It, the inner discipline.
Yes.
Could you maybe touch on that a little bit?
Yes. If we help children, I'll give you an example. If we help children make decisions, I don't say to a 2-year-old, do you want to go to bed or not? I mean, that's not a choice they get to make at that age. But I do say to them, do you want to go to bed now with your red pajamas or now with your blue pajamas? And they show up red bottoms, blue top. You know, it's not life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy. Let it go. But what it says to that child is, I have agency in my life, and I can make a difference in my life. I can make choices that others may not agree with. I still am capable of making those decisions. And what we do in, so you go from red pajama, blue pajama, to three outfits, pick one. And our artistic third child put his clothes in such interesting combination. I made him a button that said, I dress myself. And he proudly wore that to school. Now he's 47 and a wonderful artist, but he does his own thing. All my kids were like day, night, and afternoon. But it's again, giving them those choices in all areas of their lives. I don't say to a child, if you eat everything on your plate, you can have dessert, because that says what's on your plate is so bad, we have to bribe you to eat it. I want them to understand that we look at a variety of foods in our lives, and you make sure you're eating healthy. So we let them make some of those choices. I put dessert right on their plates when they're little. And I don't care if they eat it before or after or with the mashed potatoes, because it's fruit. And if we want to raise a healthier generation than we are, it will be fruit most of the time. And then when they get a chocolate cupcake, they tend to scrape the icing off. But you see, what you're saying at that point is that you do have that agency, and how you control your own behavior becomes your inner discipline. So if you constantly increase responsibilities and decision making with children in all areas of their life and decrease limits and boundaries, when they leave home, they'll be making all of their own decisions and responsible for all of their own behavior, and not saying things like, he made me do it, or it's not my fault, it's somebody else's fault. So that inner discipline, that self-discipline, doesn't just happen. It giving kids responsibilities and decision-making opportunities, but it also involves looking at discipline not as punishment. And we often use those words as if they're synonymous. They simply are not. Punishment is something we do to a child. Discipline is something we do with them in order for them to develop their own inner discipline. I just recently compiled all my work for 55 years into a very small book on discipline, mistakes, mischief, and mayhem. And how do we treat a mistake? You say, why do we need discipline for a mistake? Because discipline with authority means to give life to a child's learning. A 3-year-old breaks a glass, a 5-year-old accidentally marks on a paper and goes off and marks on a table. Those are mistakes. A 16-year-old breaking a beaker with caustic material accidentally in a lab class. Those are mistakes. So what do you do with the mistake? You have the child own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. That helps them develop the sense of not only agency, but when I mess up, I don't blame somebody else. I'm not afraid of being punished for doing it. I am being held accountable And the little simple formula, own it, fix it, learn from it, move on, is something we as parents and educators can look at very carefully once we've discerned that this is a mistake. If it's mischief, I go to those four steps of discipline, show them what they've done wrong, give them ownership, give them ways to solve it, and leave their dignity intact. If it's mayhem, and by the way, bullying in any of its forms is mayhem because there's an intent to harm somebody, whether it's verbally, physically, or socially. And online has become a big area that we need to be very much concerned about. But not all mayhem is bullying. All bullying is mayhem to certain degrees and stuff. But what do you do with bullying? It's called restorative practices, restitution, resolution, reconciliation. You have to own and fix to the best of your ability the harm you cause. That's difficult, but necessary. Resolution. Tell me how you're going to keep it from happening again. And most kids say, I won't do it again. I say, well, that's good. That's what you won't do. Tell me what you will do. The most difficult, but the most powerful part is that restoration of the harm in our relationships. It's different than conflict resolution. It's restoration where we empower the child who has been targeted and we humble, not humiliate, but humble the child who has caused the harm. And that helps them recognize that I am solely responsible for my own behavior. And that what I do matters. I can be a part of a group that does to harm. I can actually instigate the harm, but I can also go along to get along, or I can be courageous and stand up and step in and do something. For instance, a 5-year-old, you say, oh my goodness, bullying at 5. Yeah, girls begin about 4 and a half. But the 5-year-old, very popular girl, who I call in this situation is playing the role of the high status social bully says to all the other girls, I don't like the new girl. You want to be in my group? Don't eat lunch with her. And that can happen at 5 or 15 or in the adult world. I want your daughter to know that she can be that brave-hearted kid, that she can go and sit next to the new girl, knowing that she will do this at cost. There's not going to be any scratches of stickers and stars and catch 'em being good awards or lunch with the principal. What you'll probably get is Oh Miss Goody Two Shoes or You're Next. And that young boy in the locker room, when that high status social bully says, I don't like the new boy. Look at that kid, different skin color, religion, gender, physical or mental ability, which, by the way, are the big five for hate crimes. What makes a hate crime different than any other crime? It's criminal bullying. Let's go mess him up. I want your young boy to be willing to say, that's mean, that's cruel, back off, leave him alone. He's not a bad kid. He knows he might get, well, what are you, chicken, or you just like him? You have raised him to believe you do the right thing, even if it costs you. That's why you do not want to raise praise dependent, reward dependent kids who are in it for what's in it for me. That's helping develop a strong backbone, an ethical backbone, a sense of deep caring and compassion for other human beings.
I had a pretty, with everything going on in this world in the past like week and a half,
Yes.
and I'm not going to go into specifics or anything like that, but and you're up in Canada, correct?
No, I'm American. I'm in Colorado. Many
Why
people,
do I think you're a Canadian?
a
Okay,
lot of
I'm
people
sorry.
think I'm Canadian because my
I'm
books
so
are all
sorry.
bestsellers up there.
That's what I was thinking. So,
Yeah, no.
I mean, you've seen both sides of the spectrum, school bullying all the way to genocide in Rwanda.
I have.
So what connections can you make as far as letting our listeners know between the connection of bullying in schools to larger issues, what we're seeing here in America as far as sheer intolerance and just generalizations of groups, all Democrats bad, all Republicans bad, all like where it's almost playground like behavior, like what you're talking, instead of
It
taking
is
individuals
playground
as they are.
behavior. It is playground behavior. We think once kids are out of high school that bullying stops. Give me a break. If we do not rewrite their script and help them, and by the way, these are roles they're playing, remember, they're not who they are. However, if they play it long enough, they become like a character actor. If I would say to you, and it may be you're too young to really, if I said Henry Winkler to you, what would you think? The Fonz.
The Fonz, yeah.
Yeah, hey, he's a phenomenal Shakespearean actor and he writes children's books. You see, but we have characterized him in this role. So if we do not break that cycle in the younger years, they don't develop strong friendships. They don't develop the ability to relate to other human beings. They only know to use power and control. And even kids who are playing the role of high status social bully, and we think, oh, they've got everything going in their lives, there's a big hole in them where they do not understand that I am unique and I have gifts and talents, but I can only develop those talents in relation to other human beings. We live in community. And what I see happening in our country, but quite literally all over the world, is this division and othering of other human beings. The othering to me, I think, is more damaging. When we start dehumanizing one human being or a collective group of human beings and calling them gross names or labeling them in a very negative light, right there, we stop any possibility of communicating in a healthy way. I believe that we can have conflicts, and we have to teach children how to handle those conflicts nonviolently. I think it's something we've missed in not only our country, but throughout the world when we don't handle our conflicts nonviolently. However, we cannot use those tools to deal with mean and cruel. When people are being mean and cruel, even under the guise of debate, or the guise of communicating with others, we have othered the other person. That I want to get in a debate with you. I want to argue with you. However, I'm going to do it with an iron fist. And I'm right, you're wrong, mindset. And I'm going to prove you wrong. And so I want kids to understand, I'm not a real fan of debate, by the way. Because there's a winner and a loser in our high school debate teams. And you say, well, it's teaching them. No, I want to teach them how to deal with mean and cruel and how to deal with a true conflict. I'm going to give you an example on the home scene, going down back to little kids. Two kids fighting over a TV program. That is a fight. Next time your children fight, first thing I want you to say, they're normal. Children who don't fight, don't enter into conflict, grow up to make lousy spouses. And if anybody listening is married to somebody who won't enter into conflict, keep the peace, let it be, don't bring it up, knows how difficult that is to live with that person. Because conflict is inevitable, violence is not. And so I have a job to teach those two kids how to handle their conflict. And this is where I get into the three kinds of families: brick wall, jellyfish, and backbone. The brick wall parent says, stop it, stop it, stop it, turn that set off. Nobody's listening. And nobody's watching TV. I've got it. Which says, I am going to handle your problems. And an adult has to be around to do it. We often hear about there's no adult in the room. Well, that's the mindset that an adult can handle it, but you can't. Jellyfish goes, oh, please, your brothers and sisters, please love one another. Don't do this to me, as if it's something they're doing to me. No, they're fighting over a TV program. Neither brick wall or jellyfish help kids handle their own conflicts. But a backbone parent, now look at a backbone, flexibility. We need to be flexible working with our children and teaching them. But it also gives an environment that's so critical in our homes and schools that gives kids the opportunity to make choices and decisions and mistakes that have reasonable guidelines and limits and boundaries. And so a backbone parent walks in, takes the remote, turns the TV off, and says, you're fighting. I always like to tell kids what I think they're doing. You're fighting. Identify it. You may both have this remote back as soon as you have a plan for how you're going to handle it. You put that back on the kids. And as long as whatever plan they came up with is not life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy, I mean, if one kid says, "I want to beat you over the head, you don't let me watch that program," my job as a caring parent is not to say, "Don't say that." It's to say, "Whoa, that's not a good idea. I think you can come up with a better one than that," inviting them to come up with something better. But if one says, "You let me watch this program today, you can have two tomorrow," and you and the older kid know tomorrow's Saturday, nothing's on, don't say a word. It's not the teachable moment. It's the next day when that little one goes, "There's nothing on." Now it's time for them to learn. They've experienced the consequence for a choice they made. And I say, "I noticed you're giving in to your big brother a lot. Would you like to learn a few good lines?" And you teach them the lines, like, "I'm willing to let you watch this program today if I can have two on Monday and Tuesday, and I want it in writing." You teach that little one to do that, nobody's gonna walk all over him. But that's not bullying. A 10-year-old has the 5-year-old's arm up the back, and we're not talking a yoga pose. The kid's screaming in pain. You rush in there to see what's happening. And as soon as your daughter sees you, she drops her brother's arm and starts comforting him. And we say, "What are you screaming about?" And the way your daughter looks at your son, because bullying has to do with intimidation, he knows as soon as you leave, she's going to whoop him again. And so he says, "Oh, nothing, Mom, nothing." And we said, "Well, quit screaming then. We have just retargeted that targeted kid. But step back a moment. When you walked in there, you saw something you wished you hadn't seen. You saw your daughter smile before she saw you. She was getting pleasure from hurting her younger brother. That is not conflict. That is sibling bullying. And we need to be willing to address it for what it is. Even if the kid said, "Well, I didn't mean it," or online saying, "Laugh out loud, it was just a joke." No, it wasn't. It was an attack. And so we need to call it for what it is. And that young girl has to be held accountable for what she did, restitution, resolution, restoration with her younger brother. And we need to look at what are the antidotes to her mean and cruel. And we have to give her the opportunity to do good so she can practice doing good and see how good that feels. We have to teach her there's basically four antidotes to that: a strong sense of self, teaching her how to be a friend, even to her brother, who can be real obnoxious sometimes. We don't teach children to be friends today. They think if they have 500 clicks, they've got 500 friends. They don't have 500 friends. Can you have a friend online? Yes, pen pals have communicated across the world and had a deep bond. But it's not 500. It's one-on-one. Friendships are one-on-one, online and offline. So we need to teach her to be a friend. Make sure they have at least one friend. Bullies are cowards. They tend not to pick on somebody who's got a kid hanging with them. We have to teach them how to get in a group and how to get out. Getting their own needs met, but not sacrificing the needs or the hurt of another human being. So, recognizing that and helping them develop that sense of, "I am responsible for my own behavior."
That is, yeah, I mean, I wish I could talk to you all day. So if people listening, they want to learn more, they go to kidsareworthit.com, right?
Yes.
Okay, got it. So we'll go with a couple more questions and then I'll let you go. It's interesting that you're getting down to the root of this. As a former classroom teacher, I do all my stuff online now, but I used to teach very young kids, and I couldn't agree more that it starts at the home. But it also extends with the school. And would you say it's more of like a synergetic relationship between home and school, reinforcing? You didn't say discipline, you say consequences, or understanding that conflict, like how you said, conflict is normal, conflict is okay, but it's violence is not okay. What kind of advice would you have for schools when it comes to bringing in the home? Bringing in those parents because they might not have that skill set. So, what kind of advice would you have for the schools?
Well, first of all, whenever I do a teacher in service, I always offer a free parent session at night so that we're on the same page. And I do that because grants often, if you have a teacher in service, those grants are only for teachers. They can't be for parents. So they don't tend to connect. So I always offer that because I believe we need to be connected. But I've also always said in my university teaching with young, new educators or people coming back into the field that if our children come from strong, healthy, functioning families, no matter what their makeup of that family is, it makes our job easier. If they don't come to us from strong, functioning, healthy families, it makes our job more important. And we have to see that every kid walking through that door matters. I believe every one of them, no matter where they come from, their dad's an alcoholic, mother has an interesting occupation, brother's been in jail. They're a kid. And we need to say, I believe in you. I trust in you. I know you can handle this. You're listened to, cared for, very important to me. We also have to reach out to parents and affirm that our children have that dignity and worth. And if you're struggling with an issue at home, I'm open. You can talk to me about it. Kids need to know they can talk to their parents and their teachers about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if the only safe harbor is at school because they have a sibling bullying them or they're witnessing abuse at home or neglect, and that doesn't mean economic. I've seen many, many poor families truly do everything they can to help their children be successful in school. And I've also seen people who, of good means, don't feed their kids breakfast because they're off to their power breakfast, leaving it for their children. So don't be stereotyping what that parent is or that child and where they come from. I lived across the railroad tracks growing up, and some of our teachers referred to us as white trash. And I'm talking in the 60s, but that existed. And hopefully we've moved away from most of that, but not totally. We haven't moved totally away with stereotyping individuals and saying that they don't have value and worth, or at least not that value and worth that others have. So I believe, and it's really key if we all can do this together. And I've always said, though, hey, this is safe harbor for every child, no matter what they're coming from. Can we help parents get needs met? Can we help them? Yes, we can reach out to them and let them know that we care about them as well, and we care about younger siblings and the like. And we don't judge the child by what an older brother or sister has done. And that, hey, but for good fortune go most of us. I mean, kids have free will and peer pressure. And so we have to say, okay, they blew it. I work with young offenders. They blew it. That doesn't mean that that is who they are. It's what they've done. And there needs to be a way for them to have some sort of restoration or reconciliation if it's a conflict that escalated to something violent, or if it's true, mean, and cruel, and that they can come back from that.
That's solid advice. Before I let you go, I always ask, this is like a variation of the question that I always ask for our guests, but what kind of advice would you have for these kids who are coming up in the world, who might be bullies or might be victims of bullying? Because I do have students that listen to this podcast. So what kind of advice would you have for them?
If you have been targeted, you need to find someone you can tell that you trust, that they will do something about it, that they will help hold accountable the person who did it or persons. By the way, it's more often persons, that trap of comradeship, that bullying trap, so to speak. And then for those who are targeting other kids and those who get trapped in this comradeship, to hold them accountable for what they've done. The first three, the bully, the henchman, and the active supporter, can now be legally accountable for the damage they cause. But I want other kids to recognize that if you're a passive supporter or a disengaged onlooker or a potential witness who then decides it's too big a headache and they go back into the support of the bully's antics and go along to get along, that we have an ethical obligation. And so I want kids to understand that. I give the bully circle to 5 and 6 year olds, and then they can talk the language and be able to say, when I had a little girl come up to me and tears in her eyes, she said, "They were teasing me." I said, "I bet they weren't, hon. I'll bet they were taunting you." Because teasing is what friends do, taunting is what bullies do. Teasing, you and I can laugh. Taunting, I'm laughing at you. Big difference. 5 years old, they get it. And so I want them to begin to have the language. And there always need to be safe harbor. I want kids up front to know there is someone who will listen. If you, it could be the janitor, it could be the cook, it could be the bus driver, it could be the coach. I found it as a special ed teacher, they'd often come to me. And because someone has said in her classroom, it's not allowed. I've always said, no more. That is mean. That is cruel. This is safe harbor for everyone in this classroom. And I would say it if an adult was berating a kid, which I found a lot with my kids with special needs. And they would always say, "Your kid did this on the playground." Okay, he hasn't been identified yet, but I think I can work with him, kind of thing. So we need to let kids know that someone's here for you. Sometimes it's that helpline. Sad to say, they're being cut. The funding is being cut. We have to fight for that. Kids need to be able to talk to somebody when they're feeling horribly depressed about what's going on in their lives. And being targeted can beat you up badly. And if they get no support, they begin to believe it. I am dumb. I am stupid. I am no good. And I don't want kids to ever have that sense that they have been targeted and now they're targeting themselves. So it's being there and being present and speaking those words, saying, "This is safe harbor." And when somebody diminishes somebody else in the classroom, you're right on it, on the playground, in the bus. We all need to be in this together. And one of the important things is teaching parents the difference between conflict and sibling bullying, that sibling bullying is devastating to both parties in that.
Well, I can't thank you enough as a former special ed student. Thank you for advocating for us. But anyone who's listening, if you guys want to learn more, check out kidsareworthit.com. And Barbara, thank you so much for spending this morning with me. I appreciate you greatly, and I can't wait to read more.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your giving me this opportunity to present such a vital subject. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you.